You're listening to The Psychedologist. This is Consciousness Positive Radio. The luminous Sovereign Xavier lights up the room. In this episode, we talk about mending, the birth of Blackadelics in Colorado, collective and decentralized movements, deepening commitment to community, sharing resources, and queerness giving hope for the world. Sovereign serves as a catalyst for systemic change, leading as founder and co-creator of Alchemy Consulting and Development, a niche consulting firm that specializes in transmuting individuals, communities, and organizations through the process of alchemy. Collaborating with individuals, organizations, and movements, Sovereign facilitates the transmutation of cultural, interpersonal, and ecological design. Their work is grounded in core values of self-care, community care, and collective liberation, striving to create inclusive ecosystems where every voice is heard and valued. Sovereign believes in shared responsibility for creating positive change and emphasizes the importance of mutual support and care in pursuit of collective liberation. Welcome to The Psychedologist, Sovereign.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you, and I love seeing your big smile.
Yay! It's been a lifesaver. Or just laughing in general, you know?
How so?
It's just always been something that I have access to no matter what. Just like being able to just laugh and smile, I just immediately lifts me up. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've noticed, especially like last year, like 2023, I think was hard for a lot of people, but there was a lot that I went through, a lot of like physical pain, specifically, and to be able to laugh and to smile, just, it's such a gift.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Well, would you like to start in by talking about your relationship to consciousness as a tiny human or coming up in your years?
Yeah, this is interesting because I remember as a kid, and this may sound, you know, strange to people, but I was thinking about this and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna share this. One of my first memories as a kid was like falling out of the sky and into my body.
Wow.
And it was weird. I was just falling at like a rapid speed, and then I just like hit the bed and like came up. And I looked around and I was like, what? And I was like, was I dreaming? But I didn't close my eyes or open them. Like that, you know, the process of like waking up and being like, oh, where am I? Like, I don't feel like I had that. It was just like, I came from somewhere. And so from, I don't know, like my whole, like as a kid, I've just always had like an extra piece of awareness. I could see things. I could, you know, I don't know. I just had like a way about me, one could say. Like I was aware of conflict at a really young age. I was mending conflict at a really young age. Just like being born into a family that just had a lot of like pain and, you know, suffering and anger. I was the one who was like trying to heal that at such a young age. So yeah, like I was a kid, but I was also like a grown up.
You're also a grown up.
Yeah, like just like fully a grown human. I don't really think I had the space to be a kid, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and just hearing this, I have the sense that you're kind of still mending things now, would you say?
Always. I always find myself to arrive in these places that need tremendous mending. So, yeah, I've been doing that my whole life.
That's, I don't know if I want it. I don't like this expression that much. Maybe you can tell me a better one, but like, that's a cross to bear.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting better with it in the sense that I'm 42 and I feel like now I'm like, oh, I want an opportunity to just, to not always be necessarily a mender. I like say that. And then the next sentence is like, I'm at some point going to school to be able to do counseling and therapy. But in order for me to really fully do that, like in a really good way, I need to fuck around and find out. Like, I feel like I need to express myself and be messy and not be such a pillar of stability. So I'm really excited to see like what the next few years are going to bring me as I bring embody my mess, whatever that is. I have no idea what that even means, but I'm going for it.
Yes. May it be so.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I resonate with that. I think you'll be a wonderful counselor. I mean, that you'll bring your gift to more and more people that way. And like, I guess counseling is facilitating inner mending in a sense.
Yeah.
Hearing this makes me curious to ask you, I mean, we've talked before, but I don't think we've ever talked about psychedelics or plant medicine, oddly.
Yeah.
Is cool. So what's the place of that in your life?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. So to give a little context of how I got to psychedelic, I've been a part of a few different like spaces and movements. I've done like HIV prevention and public health. I've done, just like land back movement stuff, land projects. I helped create a retreat space that exists in the world. I have been a part of the ecosystems of, just like movement space and activism. And I've learned so much from them and I've also left them. And in like 2021, a friend of mine was just telling me about legislation here in Colorado that was on its way. And we had went to school together and they had asked me to, lend myself and my services to the psychedelic space. And at first I was hesitant. I have a master's at Naropa and it's this Buddhist University in Boulder, Colorado. And Boulder is a very interesting place. And there are a lot of people playing in all kinds of ways. And psychedelics was part of that. And I was very apprehensive because my experience at Naropa really showed me how people use like spiritual bypassing and use psychedelics and this way to like shirk accountability and not sit in uncomfortable truth. And so I was a little hesitant, but kept being asked to like join and like help create community in the state. And so I did. I reluctantly was like, sure, like, okay, we'll see what happens. And what a ride. What a ride. And that's me trying to be nice and say, I'm glad I did it, but it was terrible. And in a lot of ways, you really get to see people. And I really got to see who people really were. And then I also got to see like those people being empowered by psychedelics, not actually listening to the medicine, not actually honoring it. And then continuing to wield power in its name. And so that has been, that's been the toughest part. It's like watching people wield power in the name of psychedelics.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never heard it quite put that way. And yet I think I've seen exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It's some super scary stuff. Like, you know, I am one of the people that thinks like psychedelics could be one of the last hopes for, right? Like I know everything collapsing, that's a hope. Like something new could, you know, scary things could come from that too. I'm sure they will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's when the power and the opportunity in these medicines is just like utilized to further the power, like stratification and right. upholding like all the systems that traumatize people in the first place.
Right.
It's so disheartening.
Right. And like, I come from a place, you know, again, being a tiny adult, it feels like I've been around for a really long time. And the analogy that I use is like for folks at home, like Terminator 2, where Sarah Connor is like on the fence and she's shaking it to get the kids' attention and they're all playing. And it was like right before Armageddon essentially happened. And she's like trying to warn people and they're like not listening. They can't see her. They don't hear her. And then the thing happens. And so, yeah, it's just like, I come into space like, hey, here is what is coming. Like, do we want to do something about it? And people collectively, you know, like don't hear it and they don't see it. And it's been really heartbreaking in this space. I'll just say one of the things that I created, I was in the process of, I feel like the space needs some sort of like certification or like a scoring or some way to, for us to be grounded in ethics and like what we, how we are as individuals, how we are as businesses, how we are as community, and really kind of like lay that stuff out so that when people are either in and out of alignment, like that can be named and that's collectively invested in. So like, you know, one of the things, you know, I don't know, have you ever heard of B Corp certification?
Yeah.
So like the idea is like, well, you know, how do we do this in a good way? And first and foremost, it's like listening to indigenous wisdom and like land-based practices, right? One of the things that I believe is like also creating frameworks of like restoration and reparation, you know, leadership, governance, you know, what's your impact in your organization and what's your impact in community? Like really trying to create the world in which, or the board in which this game is being played. And was told in so many words that the movement or the space isn't ready for that. And so I got angry at that because I'm like, so what's going to happen is business is going to go as usual. All of these harms are going to be piling up. And then once that harm piles up in such a way that money can be made from it, then people are going to pay attention to it. And then all of that work is going to be relevant. And that's probably going to be in like, you know, maybe five years from now. But right. But I'm like, there are people in this movement who are ready to do this work now, and you're saying that we have to wait until there's a problem. And so that just like broke my heart because I'm just like, oh, y'all are really gonna wait. You're just gonna wait it out and just make as much money as you can. And then when you're done making money off the problem, then you're gonna try to make money off the solution. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, get to hell, like I gotta go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hell, like upside down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I mean, do you want to say anything about Blackadelics?
I do. So that's my experience in psychedelic is what birthed Blackadelic. You know, being in this space and again watching people wield money and power in psychedelic name. And then while they're wielding that power, continuing not to listen to indigenous voices and continuing to leave people out of what's happening. And so one of the things that I noticed was like, yeah, like that's happening. And like, where do Black folks belong in this movement? Like, what do Black people want out of this? Do they want anything out of this? Like, what are Black people doing? And then, you know, like folks like, you know, A Table of Our Own and Oakland Hyphae, there are like these really cool Black folks who are doing stuff in the space. But where I'm at in Colorado, like that stuff wasn't around. And so my thing was like, well, again, like, what do Black people need? And like not being afraid to name that, because in movements past that I've been a part of, I've been afraid to stand and name that the Black piece needs to be recognized. And a lot of, like, we don't talk about this. Some folks do, but like a lot of times Blackness has to like exist within like a POC or BIPOC umbrella in order to be seen, you know. And so my thing was like, well, we're gonna bring the B out of POC and the B out of BIPOC, and we're gonna handle it. Like, we're gonna really try to figure out what is needed, what's desired, and how to take care of each other. And like, truthfully, you know, just telling my secret today, I just want Black folks to be so intimately interrelated and so fiercely committed to healing with each other that new solutions emerge from the purging of, you know, colonization, from the purging of white supremacy within ourselves, that we then are like, damn, we really have been dealing with some stuff. Now, like, let's move forward, and whatever way that looks, you know, like, and that's, I think, the key piece with Blackadelic. Like, it's not just like I'm telling you or I'm telling my community what needs to happen. It's like the one thing that could happen and should happen potentially is healing, you know, and that looks different for everybody. But as we continue to commit to showing up with one another and take care of one another, these new solutions and opportunities emerge for healing. And so like that's my dream and my prayer for Blackadelic, is that it becomes a place where across the planet where Black folks converge and figure out how to take care of one another. And like, psychedelics can be part of that or not, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm so for this and so in support and appreciative of what you're doing.
Thank you. I was hired. I didn't want to do it at first because, I mean, as you know, the way power works in this world and right now, it's like the charismatic leader or like the one person that like tells everybody what to do. And again, I've been part of many movements and I've watched them fall because of that dynamic. And then and the ways that we all play into that, right? Like platforms and speaking engagements and, you know, all of the things that we do to either get our point across or like to keep a movement alive, I think also hurts us in a lot of ways because it makes us vulnerable when it's like one person or a small tiny group of people, because that group can be infiltrated and, you know, torn apart from the inside. So it's like, how do you make a movement, a collective movement and a decentralized movement? And I haven't figured it out. Like, definitely making mistakes out here. But I think the one thing that I continue to commit to is, like, I'm still going to continue to show up in the pursuit of Black healing and the healing of, like, the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So interconnected. And I took a really great course this past year from, let's see, the name of the school is, well, the course was Roots Deeper Than Whiteness. And yeah, right now the name of the school is escaping me. I can put it in the show notes, but it was just talking about how intertwined liberation for everyone is, that like whiteness was created to keep people separate. And you know, that like generations and generations of Europeans who were like, you know, relatively enslaved by the feudal system, were finally, like, after so much resistance and so much fighting against that, offered an opportunity to not be in that place anymore. And it was like, this is the deal. It's like, no, we're the same. We're white. See, it's like, white, what's that? It's like, well, we're not like those people. And right. You're going to have more privileges. And then how Jewish people were also incorporated into that as like the collectors of the taxes and rent, and how that is just like, just using people and groups to uphold this structure that is like a cancer for the planet.
Right.
And I feel like, I don't know, something, I don't know. Tell me, I'm curious how this lands for you. I feel that the souls of the people, you know, the 1%, as it were, you just like, their souls are, I feel, screaming. Like, they must be in so much pain that they can't even feel. Like, they have to keep doing more and more to not feel the pain of what they're inflicting on others. And so it's almost like, I just feel like my brain can't process it. I think I used to feel really mad at everyone who holds the power. And now I'm just like, I actually can't even understand it, how that someone could possibly do that to someone else.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I sometimes wonder too, like, is it this thing, is it something that's automated so much that, yeah, like, people are just doing it without thinking about it. But then I go to, I'm like, well, how do you get someone out, or how do you intercept that programming to like pull someone out of whatever they're being automated to do? And it's really interesting. It's really interesting because I'm like, this is where it gets into conspiracy. You know, I'm just like, those who are in power, I feel like, also have like maybe people whose job is to just make sure that those that people are always in that frame of mind, right? Like, they're, you can't get to them. Like, I'll say, for example, this land project that I helped create, we got funding from someone who had all the money, and they were part of the process, and they were in these phone calls with us up until he decided that he wanted to give us the money. And I remember having conversations with my team of being like, we might be able to get in there and help this person see that it's more than just giving this one group of people a whole bunch of money. Like, this project is something that like has to exist across the planet if we're going to actually make an impact. But as soon as he decided to give the money, we never saw him again. He was like, yes, that's great. And then he got off the call and we like never saw him again. And so it's like, well, I was like, dang, like, there's my opportunity to try to get to this person. And then it was severed. And then I've had experiences, and, you know, specifically in the psychedelic space, of like meeting people who have a lot of money, but they're also surrounded by yes people who validate their reality, and you can't get to them fully because the people that they trust are the people who continue to like feed that monster, that thing, that energy. And so as I'm watching, I'm like, wow, like it would be nice to be able to talk to that person, but it's clear that there are like three people who are keeping me from doing that, because in order to talk to him, I have to talk to these other people, and their job is like to shield him, whether they know it or not. And it's usually white men, like, let's just be clear, 2024, we're all about telling the truth. So it's like, you know, in order to have these conversations with these white men who have all this money, you have to go through their like trusted people, and it's their job to like protect whatever it is that, you know, they're protecting, which is usually, you know, colonization, white supremacy, all the things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before we end up talking about the bourgeoisie for another minute, tell me what's been on your heart these days, or like, what are you excited about? You do a lot of great work. I'm so curious to hear more about what you're doing.
Yeah. Again, I do a horrible job of keeping my cards close to my chest, but I just believe in everyone knowing and trying to experiment and figure this stuff out. But one of the things that's really on my heart right now is the idea of like deepening commitment to community. The world is doing what it's doing, as we all know. And I look outside and I'm looking across the street at this like housing complex, and I don't know anybody over there. And I look to my left, and there's a blue house next door to me, and I don't know them. And part of that is because of Airbnb, and there's a high turnaround and stuff like that. But I'm really curious around how we deepen our commitment to our community, and especially with, you know, the continuing censoring of voices on social media, it's become very clear that we really need to be able to like connect with the people that are closest to us. And so I'm really curious around creating space for those relationships to be developed, because it's not necessarily, you know, not everybody gets along with everybody, right? Like, not everybody is for everybody, but if we could agree that we have, there needs to be a deeper commitment and relationship to our local, like, place, maybe there could be opportunities for some deep shift to emerge. What would it look like to, one of my good friends from graduate school, he was like, what if there was a way for people to marry their community? Mm. Like, what would it look like to be in a collective marriage with your community? You know, like with that level of commitment, you know, like trust and collaboration and not throwing anybody away and just really being committed to coming to the circle each and every day to like help each other. And so like, that's something that's really on my heart right now, because I'm just like, that's the only thing I feel like I've ever wanted. And it's the one thing that I feel like I've always like missed, or like have missed and had longed for. And so, and then putting that in the context of Blackadelics as well, like how do we, you know, there's so much tension. There's so many tensions between like the collective of Blackness, be it like country, you know, sexuality, mm-hmm. colorism, you know, there are all these like different things that keep Blackness kind of in conflict with one another. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I truly want to at least like give a compass to figure out how to mend it. So like that, all of that, just like you know, no big deal. How to heal the world, how to heal, how to stop us from going, you know, off the rails. Like, how do we come back to each other? You know, so.
Yeah, definitely. It's bringing me, hearing what you're saying is bringing me to reflect on my interpersonal relationships, which are not in my community. Like, a lot of my closest relationships live, you know, a plane ride away or long drive, mm-hmm. like see mm-hmm. them two times a year, maybe, mm-hmm. but keep yeah. in touch digitally. And yet, like, the healing through ruptures in those relationships, like being in relationship with people that are committed to, like, finding how to communicate, like, it being in balance of, like, taking care of myself while also not centering myself, like centering the relationship. And because I think some trauma responses, like for me, I would tend to make my needs smaller and fawn and kind of like accommodate to the other person. Whereas like some other people, they might be more dominating in a situation of threat and are more like, you know, self-focused. So just finding ways to swim or float on those oceans in relationship. I feel like it helps me when I have my relationships with my neighbors where I'm like, you know, your music is pissing me off, or like, I don't like, you know, what you did on the porch. Dignity is something I've been working on. It's like to stand up for myself requires dignity. And so practicing that in my closer interpersonal relationships helps me with the neighbors that I might not, you know, we might not agree as much on some of the basics, and we don't have that like bond and fondness for each other, but still it's like we are, I do feel everyone, there's like six units in my building. And it's like, we do kind of come together and get shit done when it needs to get done. And there's this like, okay, everybody's cool. And we're a very diverse group. So I'm having like a good experience with that I think was made possible by my personal relationships that are not in my community. So.
Yeah. Like, that's my dream. I want to live in a apartment building where all the folks just like, you know, whatever you need, like if you need food, it's on the second floor. If you need childcare, it's on the first floor. If you need some food, it's on the fourth floor, you know, and just, I think what's happening to you is like, there's this, you know, especially grounding this in the context of psychedelic, there's this like emergence of like retreat spaces and healing centers and things like that. And it's like, not everybody can afford to go. Not everybody can afford to escape. So how do you bring paradise to you? How do you bring, you know, the retreat to you? And so like, that's something I've been working on for the last like 10 years. And it's just like, it is commitment to community, and it's having relationships with neighbors, even if you don't care for them. Like, it's like, hey, we're in close proximity to each other. You know, like, if there's anything you need, you know, like, let me know. Now, what would be really, really cool is if we got to a place to where not only do we take care of people, even though they're different from us, but we take care of people regardless of how much money we have or don't have. You know, like, what would it look like for me? Like, say I'm a millionaire and I have, you know, millions of dollars, and instead of hoarding it and like keeping it and maybe giving some to my family, you know, maybe I give some to my family and I give some to my community, so that the other person in my pod or in my community who makes like $30,000 a year doesn't have to worry about much, because they're, you know, my money is their money, you know. And like, I don't know, just like what kind of radical shifts and mindset needs to happen in order, again, to stop the world from completely falling apart, or what can come out of the ashes of the old world. And I think that perspective of like, let's do this together is definitely part of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Sharing the resources. I mean, mm-hmm. the Black community is the best at that.
Yes. I was raised by single Black moms whose men were taken out and taken to prison during the drug war. Wow. And it was like a whole generation of Black men gone, you know, like in prison, you know, or addicted to drugs or killed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these fierce Black women were like, I'll take care of the kids. Y'all do food, you know, you go to work, you know, and they just, I watched them just really take care of each other. My mom had friendships with women, you know, for the last 40 years. And they are still close, even though they have completely different lives, they still manage to stay connected. And if someone needs something, they get it, you know? Mm. So yeah, a lot of my inspiration comes from them.
Wow. Yeah. I'm also thinking about queer community and all that. And anything you want to say about that?
Yeah. That to me, it's just like, the essence of liberation, because queerness is such a, it's just this innovative, creative thing that lets me know, and then always lets the world know that, like, not everything has to be, you know, Black and white or this or that. It's actually a combination of all things. Mm-hmm. And I think one of my greatest accomplishments is I created a retreat for queer people of color called Chrysalis. Mm-hmm. And that stemmed from working in public health and really, again, seeing how institutions absorb Black bodies and make money off of them and, like, not necessarily reciprocate any of what they get out. And so I just had this idea, again, of, like, how can we come together and take care of each other if this institution isn't going to actually take care of us? Like, how do we do it? And so I, by myself, had created a healing circle, a retreat, and, like, a potluck. And it was, like, this thing that kind of just would happen. And it lasted for a couple years before I moved to Colorado. And, I'm just, like, and that also kind of being inspired by queer women, because, you know, like, in San Francisco, where I am from, it's mostly driven by men. And, like, women are around, but, like, queer women are around, but you don't really, there aren't spaces for them. You know what I mean? Like, you can't go somewhere and, like, be like, oh, that's, like, a queer woman-owned space. Okay. And so it just got me curious and, like, interested and, like, where I'm like, I know they're here, like, where are they at? And so I went on this, like, adventure to, like, find my queer women. And I did, and they were, you know, taking care of kids, they were taking care of each other, you know, they were, you know, using their apartment, getting it done. And, like, meanwhile, the men are just out doing whatever they're doing, which, you know, no shade to them, but, like, shade to them, because they definitely weren't getting shit done. And so I was just like, oh my God, like, it's so beautiful. I don't know. I love queerness, and it just gives me so much hope in the world. And it's just anything, if, again, like I would say, anything is possible. And, like, nature's queer, right? It's just like, I don't know. It's just such a beautiful thing and such an inspiration to the work that I do as well.
Mm. Yes. Nature is so queer, and we finally know that.
Some of us knew. Just saying. Yeah. I had wrote just on like, you know, queer theory for grad school and this attempt of trying to like create a framework for anybody, regardless of their gender, their sexual orientation, their race. Like, it was like, how could I give someone like this power to see the world in such a way that they would be compelled to change it? And the essence of that was like, you know, queerness, because it turns essentialism on its head. It's like, no, like, just because I call this a pen, that is just a collective agreement that someone decided that this is what this is. This can be anything I want. Yeah. I want it to be. This can be anything my community wants it to be. So, like, why aren't we using that essence of thinking to, like, you know, to shape the world that we live in? Mm. And so, yeah. Anyway, I could just go on and on about just how queerness is essential to our liberation as well, regardless of like where you sit and what you believe. You may not believe in queerness, but queerness believes in you. Mm. You know?
Yeah. And I'm thinking about how earlier you were saying like community holding so much wisdom collectively, and the risk, or the lack of strength in having one leader, and how that's fallible. And I'm thinking about someone, maybe it was Thich Nhat Hanh, I'm not sure, but someone said that the next Buddha will be the collective, and it's not going to be one enlightened individual. And I my heart flutters when I think about that. It feels so true.
Yeah. It's coming. It has to, right? Like, I just think of, like, you know, growing up in the 90s to what I'm experiencing now. I'm just like, yeah, like, the level of, like, collective awakening is getting stronger. That definitely gives me hope and should give us hope, you know? Yeah, I'm gonna hold on to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and just the party that it always is when queer people get together. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because pleasure is healing. Like, celebration is necessary for liberation.
Yeah. And it's funny. I could stand to do more celebrating, more joy. You know, You know, who knows? Like, and I think for me, like, being like, going back to what we were talking about earlier with my smile and laughing. You know, like, just continuing to build on that, you know, and that, like, yeah, just like building on that and cultivating that joy. It's so important. Sometimes I forget, but it's absolutely essential.
Mm. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about before I ask you your consciousness hack?
Yeah. I don't know. I just, everybody find joy. Everybody just try to, you know, extend yourself to connect like one step closer to your local community. Put the phone down sometimes. Hug a tree.
Oh,
that'll change your life. Yeah, that'll change your life. Yeah, that's it.
Nice. Just that. So, yeah, what do you do to get in touch with yourself, your awareness, your consciousness? What's that look like for you?
Well, yeah, meditation for me. I'm so grateful to have found it, you know, just to be able to sit and just kind of like, I've just been able to understand how my brain works. And to witness it, and to just like lovingly witness it, mm-hmm. versus getting swept up in it and the swirl of it and fighting and windmilling and kicking, to just be able to like step out of that and kind of watch that happen, has been life changing. it's definitely, it gives me, I might be dating myself, but like the Matrix with the slow-mo, that was like such a like innovative effect when it came out in 1999. But I feel like it gives me that ability to slow things down and to be able to watch things. And then I can decide on how to act versus getting swept up in something and just be reactive. It saved a lot of people, myself included. Right. But yeah, I think meditation has been such an incredible gift for me. Definitely. Who knows where I'd be without it, to be honest. Probably in some organization, or many organizations, just fighting. Fully just angry and fighting. And now I'm just like collecting my energy back and, you know, like seeing those structures for what they are. And I can focus and put my energy into the things that matter to me.
Yes. 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 Wow. Thank you so much for this. There's just so much that resonated here.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm like, I hope that was helpful. Folks got something from all of my air sign rants.
If people want to follow more of your, I wouldn't call them rants, but you know, your wise sharing and your humor and just the beloved being that you are, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Sovereign_Xavier and LinkedIn. I'm on there. We'll see what happens with that.
It's a weird place.
Yeah, it's a very strange place. And then, yeah, that's about it for now until I decide, you know, like where I actually want to be as far as social media. Oh, you can email me, you know, sovereignxe@gmail.com. Yeah, and I'm really trying to figure out, you know, what my relationship to social media is going to be. So yeah, stay tuned. Maybe I'll get a website going. I think something that's come up for me is wanting to put all of my work in one place, as far as like the things that I like am doing and the things that I like hope for the world and need other humans help with. So I'll be working on that. So stay tuned for that.
That is a prayer. Yeah. And I guess people can find Blackadelics on Instagram too. Blackadelics.
Yes. So blackadelics.co. We're moving with intention and we're moving slow, but like, it's such an incredible opportunity to just be able to work with a small group of folks locally and slowly build that trust and relationship, because that's how things last. And the hope with Blackadelics, again, it's like for anywhere where, you know, Black myth converges, there's an opportunity for Blackadelics to be there. If it's, you know, just a conversation, or, you know, people need maybe some assistance on pulling an event together, or they just want to start their own little conversation group, you know, Blackadelics is here to help you.
Amazing. Thank you so very much for your work in the world, and may you receive it all back 10 times more for you and your community.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Psychedelogist. You can find us online at thepsychedelogist.com and on Instagram. The content provided in this podcast is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not a substitute for medical or therapeutic advice or an endorsement of the illegal use of substances in your applicable jurisdiction. Any discussions regarding such substances are purely informational, cultural, and for the purpose of understanding cultural contexts, historical perspectives, and psychological phenomena. The podcast assumes no responsibility or liability for the accuracy or completeness of the content provided in any episode or by any third-party materials or sites referenced. We encourage our listeners to approach these topics with an open mind and critical thinking. Please seek guidance from qualified professionals regarding any personal concerns or issues related to mental health, substance use, and well-being.